listening to 88.5
KDIC.
Welcome to Erasing Boundaries. I am DJ Daniel Kisslinger, coming to you, as always, from high above the D-Hall on Tuesday nights here at 10 at Grinnell College, KDIC 88.5 and kdic.grinnell.edu.
It's like a magic trick in a way. So, I mean, there's not a way to plan it out, you know. I think that's really the big challenge, and to the extent that we're ever successful, that's what happens.
There are two Johns in the band They Might Be Giants. That was one of them. And just a little sneak peek of what you're going to get as the show goes on. Dane Haken, Annie Piggott, and I had the chance to sit down with the two men leading They Might Be Giants for 30-plus years now, and hear what they had to say coming up. But first, here's Paul Simon's Once Upon a Time, There Was an Ocean, on Erasing Boundaries, KDIC FM 88.5, and kdic.grinnell.edu.
It's almost impossible.
Once upon a time, there was an ocean, but now it's a mountain range. Something unstoppable set into motion. Nothing's different, but everything's changed. It's a dead-end job, and you guess tired of sitting, it's like a nicotine habit. You're always thinking about quitting, and I think about quitting every day of the week. When I look out my window, it's brown and it's bleak. Out of here, how am I gonna get out of here? I'm thinking out of here, when am I gonna get out of here? And when will I cash in my lottery ticket? Bury my past with my burdens and strife. I want to shake every limb in the Garden of Eden and make every lover the love of my life. I figure that once upon a time I was an ocean, but now I'm a mountain range. Something unstoppable is set into motion. Nothing is different, but everything has changed. Found a room in the heart of the city, down by the bridge. Hot plate and TV and beer in the fridge. But I'm easy, I'm open. That's my gift. I can't flow with the traffic. I can't drift with the drift. Home again. No, never gone home again. Think about home again. I never think about home. But then comes a letter from home. The handwriting's fragile and strange. set into motion. Nothing is different, but everything has changed. The light through the stained glass was cobalt and red, and the frayed cuffs and collars were mended by halos of golden thread. The choir sang, once upon a time there was an ocean, and all the old hymns and family names came fluttering down as leaves of the ocean. As nothing is different, but everything's changed.
Once upon a time, there was an ocean, at least for Paul Simon. Next, who isn't a little stressed out? Tribe Called Quest is. Let's see what they have to say. On Erasing Boundaries, KDIC FM 88.5, and KDIC.Grinnell.edu.
To complain, but there's things in the game.
What's your name?
Consequence, I'm tight, burnt like flames.
And why's that?
American dream, they got this ghetto kid in the fiend.
Don't stress that, cause it's not in your bloodstream. Your whole being comes from greatness, we remember. Chase Long got you caught in the storms of December. And brothers on the block packing nines like September. Change the situation, kick the spot, cause all slender.
Yo, I be on the avenue where they be acting brand new. I'm flooding on these Reebok joints for shorty boo.
All of a sudden, I saw these two kids fronting, talking out their joints, but they wasn't saying nothing. My hand was on my coolie, they was acting unruly.
Don't say word.
Yo, word up, yo, I was tight, caught up. But I swallowed my pride to let that nonsense ride. Because the positive, it seems that negative died.
Yeah, we was at the dice game, making these cats look silly. Slamming, steady running off at the willy.
I had my cash fixed, my rent loop with my play dough. I gotta see some loot, so all my girls I blow. Took them shits in my palm, let them hit the flow. Kept my eyeballs scoping for them pigs, popo. I got to go on the ass, see my parole by four. But I gotta steady freak these boys like JoJo.
And I was doing it till I met Ice Spike and Mike. One roll, they had my pockets thirstier than Sprite.
Yo, I know the feeling when you feeling like you're feeling. You be having good thoughts, but the evils be revealing. And the stresses of life can take you off the right path.
Yeah.
Jealousy and envy tends to infiltrate your staff. We gotta hold it in so we can move on past all adversities so we can get through fast.
I really like, know how.
Low cash flow.
Your baby's on the way,
and you don't know who.
And Crosstown niggas tryna
bust at you.
Ayo, they got me stressed out,
and you don't know what to do.
So frame this Kodak black, revision through my contacts with a poultry scrap. Workers get pistol smacked, the switch hitting Queens niggas, liquid sauce spitting. We're raw puppies, and now your first love is thrills. Your vision of the mills got crushed like hey lover. Try to rise to the top, you just couldn't recover. And all I want is my laceration of the pie. This whipped cream before the water runs dry. Niggas flat dancing, yo, I don't know why. You're sick and snitching. She got you cruising to the pokey like Smokey. The truck be trying to 3 second homie. Well, I be trying to get star status like Shinobi. So we can build a dynasty just like the Kobe. And all I want is the world to know my Steve. These money hungry niggas is 7:30. And got me stressed out like you saw again.
I'm not afraid to die.
It's that time to be a little stressed out in the semester. That was Tribe Called Quest with Stressed Out off of Midnight Marauders, one of their greatest albums. Let's face it, they're all their greatest albums. Before that was Once Upon a Time There Was an Ocean by Paul Simon. Now let's get to the main event. Dane Hagen, Annie Piggott, and I had the opportunity to sit down at the Englert Theater in Iowa City and talk to the two lead honchos of They Might Be Giants. Why don't we hear? Let's see how Dane started it off here on Erasing Boundaries.
All right, so you guys have been doing this for 30 years now, and the obvious question would be like what you've learned in that time, but I want to know what are some mistakes that you keep making in all this time?
It's interesting. That's an interesting way of thinking about it, because in some ways, like, I guess you do make the same kind of mistakes over and over again, then you turn that into a virtue, and that then becomes kind of like your, you know, I think by classical rules, we should have figured out how to have it like a hit song in America by this time, you know? And I think it's at a certain point, it became apparent that that wasn't our thing, you know, that even though we like hit songs, we haven't tapped into like that particular like formula, that like there's some way that you do a thing where you just keep ringing the bell over and over, like hit song, another hit song. You know, we write songs that feel like, kind of like hit songs always to us. Yeah, but you know, we like pop songs. In other words, we like yeah, we like chorus, verse, chorus, and all that. You know, we kind of had to work out a way to keep doing it and keep having that be what we loved without being the Beatles, basically, you know, somehow. Do you want to add something to that? Or okay.
Who needs a hit anyway? Right?
Yeah.
Well, it does factor into one of our other questions, which we cut, was why is Don't Let's Start such a bitchin' pop song?
That is one of our...
Yeah.
Why is it such an awesome pop song? Yeah.
I'll turn that over to Flint.
I wrote the song, so yeah. He can answer.
I can tell you why it's so good. Because it's got a lot of different parts that are all really satisfying. You know, so it's sort of like a lot of pops. You know, some songs are sort of monolithic, and some songs are kind of piecey, and it kind of goes from different pieces that are all like, it's got a very strong verse and a very strong chorus and a very strong like bridge break thing that are all kind of equally memorable. So it's like I think that is why it succeeds.
Don't let's start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you are my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around how you get around. When you are alone, you are the cat, you are the phone, you are an animal. The words I'm singing now mean nothing more than me. And do I need about to be teenage this time? Don't let's start. This is the worst part. Could believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. How do you get around? No one in the world ever gets what they want. What they're not, and I wish they would stop saying dabbity dog dog ding dang dibbity dibbity dog dog ding dang dibbity. World destruction over an overture. And do I need about to be teeny this time? Don't let's start. This is the worst part. The belief for all the world that you are my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. I don't get around. I don't want to live in this world anymore. I don't want to live in this world. Don't let's start. This is the worst part. The belief for all the world that you are my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. How you get around?
You have a large element of humor to your music, which isn't probably anything new to hear. But I want to know, I'm a big fan of the type of music that you play that has a playful side and has a humorous side. But I think a lot of people automatically hear that music has a sense of humor and then they put it in the camp of parody or that they kind of look down upon it.
Sure.
I want to know if you've encountered that in any form and why you think that is.
In some ways it's like this cross to bear that we decided not to edit the humor out when we started writing songs, that we thought, you know, if something was funny, that was okay to put in the song. And the alternative possibility, which was that people would that it would seem like we were trying to be taken like deadly seriously, was so unappetizing to us that we were willing to put up with the possibility that people not very close to what we were doing would misinterpret it as like a novelty music or something. That seemed like that was a risk we were way more willing to take than being thought of as some kind of unbearably serious thing, you know. If you really obviously get into any band, you see it stops being this reductive thing, you know, this is all it is. It's obviously something more complicated, and we do take ourselves pretty freaking serious, like way too seriously, actually. But we don't want to burden other people with our problems. You know,
I got a follow up on this. We like to make it look hard, but the whole thing about rock music in general that's really difficult is it is this sort of emotionally arrested music, and it brings on a lot of adolescent style insecurity. And I feel like actually one of the things we're trying to do is, you know, besides just being sort of art school pretentious, which comes very natural to us, is to actually sort of push the idea of what a popular song can be post-adolescent stuff. We started this band in our 20s and actually only really kind of found, you know, started making records like in our late 20s. So we weren't kids when we started. So it wasn't just like, hey, you know, let's, you know, take the piss out of this or that, or just be, a lot of what we're doing is very far from pastiche, and is in no way about the culture. I think in general, when people hear that you have humor in your music, they kind of key in on pop culture references, which we certainly do have, but a lot of times I feel like we're using pop culture references in a very abstracted and kind of, it's like beamed off a satellite. Like, I don't even think we're really, you know, we recently put together a song about Whitney Houston, and it really has very little to do with Whitney Houston. I mean, it's very not, you know, even though there's some specific things about her even in it, like songs that she had written or mentioned and stuff like that. She's just really like a place marker for a famous person, and it could have been anything. But it's an interesting thing. I mean, I think the you know, there's some real problems with humor in music, and there's some fake like rock critic problems with music and humor in music. I mean, the real problem is that it's nitroglycerin. It actually undermines like the staying power of a good song if it's got too much of a gag in it, and that's sort of sad.
Particle man, doing the things a particle can. What's he like? It's not important. Particle man. Is he a dot or is he a speck? When he's underwater, does he get wet? Or does the water get dim instead? Nobody knows. Particle man. Triangle man.
universe man. He's got a watch with a minute hand, millennium hand, energy on hand. And when they meet, it's a happy land, powerful man, universe man. Person man, hit on the head with a frying pan, lives his life in a garbage can. Person man, is he depressed or is he a mess? Does he feel totally worthless? Who came up with person man? Degraded man, person man. Triangle man, triangle man hates person man. They have a fight, triangle wins, triangle man.
Humor has this much shorter shelf life culturally than other stuff that, you know, things that we thought were, when we were growing up, were like incredibly edgy and interesting in humor are the, were the first things to die. And like my son doesn't respond to any of this stuff that, that, or it's surprising actually what he responds to, but it's like most of it has died on the vine, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when we were 15 years old, something like Monty Python actually seemed to have like some, it was meaningful culturally, like it was pushing something forward in the world that was actually pretty interesting and definitely edgy. And it's very hard in retrospect to see that as anything. I guess nobody listens to like Emerson, Lake and Palmer albums either. So it's not like things don't have a shelf life, you know. I mean, culture, you know, you're in the popular culture and then, you know, things fade. But, I mean, the, I guess the final thing I was going to say about the sort of the getting back to the adolescent thing, I think it's very, very, it really makes rock critics super nervous. And like, there's a lot of interesting critical thought about rock music, like, but it's also a very, it's a very pretentious thing to be writing rock criticism, be trying to elevate this sort of, you know, teenage music into something that maybe it really isn't or shouldn't be. But, you know, rock music's great, and it captivates people, and it hypnotizes people, and people love rock, you know, like, people dedicate their lives to rock music, and that's cool. I think the thing about adding the humor element to it is it makes it, the people are already worried that rock music is kind of silly. So, like, having rock music that has, that doesn't take itself too seriously is really, really messes with people's preconceived notions. So it's like, no, we, it's got to be serious, man, because it's rock, you know. Yeah. So we're kind of messing with the man when, in a certain sense, and that was not by design. It wasn't like we were trying to tweak the culture at all. We're really we're completely self-involved and only think about the things that that we're interested in. But I think where we stand culturally ends up being a little bit more controversial or a little bit just I think there are probably some people who just wish we would disappear, but that's okay.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on saying anything, but I just want to add what you were saying about this, the humor. There's definitely room for humor in rock, but often that's in the form of kind of mocking the form. So to have musicians who are taking their music seriously and bringing humor in a way that's not kind of self-deprecating to rock as like a, as a medium. Right. It's an interesting balance, and that's what I think people kind of have a little bit of a pushback. If you're making fun of rock, that's then it's, you know, then it's a little bit of a joke. That's okay.
I have an awful lot of electric guitars if I'm making fun of rock. Yeah. I've got an awful lot of distortion units
that's
to.
Self-deprecating.
Yeah. No, I mean I love the rock. I love the rock music.
We've been driving around from one end of this town to the other and back, but no one's ever seen us driving our Econoline van, and no one's ever heard of our band. We're the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurban, Appal, and Gilgamesh. Scratch it all down into the clay, half believing there will sometime come
Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. The Mesopotamish sun is beating down and making cracks in the ground, but there's nowhere else to stand in Mesopotamia. The kingdom where we secretly reign, the land where we invisibly rule as the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. This is my last stick of gum. I'm gonna cut it up so everybody else gets some, except for Ashurbanipal, who says my haircut makes me look like a Mohenjo. I'm a Mesopotamian, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. We're the Mesopotamian, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. Hey man, I thought that you were dead. I thought you crashed your car. No.
What's the next question?
Well, part of what you guys were getting at is that, like, there's, like, to your music, there's an element of, like, the literary, and I think people don't want that either in the music. And I think you play with this perfect kind of structure of satire, where on the surface is the humor, but then you use that. It's kind of a transport unit more than the final, like, destination, right?
What I was thinking about, like, the references, just kind of like going through them in my mind. I remember being, because I started listening to you guys when I was in middle school, and there were definitely references I didn't understand. Like Jason and the Argonauts was something I was like looking up as a middle schooler to figure out what the song was about. So I think, you know, I don't know if the references are all, and obviously like you get to decide, but I think some of them are kind of standalone or timeless that aren't gonna, I don't know.
And it's not like the ultimate thing in the song. It's all part of the package
in,
that you can.
With everything else.
Yeah.
Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. I have a secret to tell from my electrical well. It's a simple message and I'm leaving out the whistles and bells. So the room must listen to me, filibuster vigilantly. My name is Blue Canary, one note spelled L-I-T-E. My story's like the Longines Symphony, it doesn't rest. Blue Canary in the outlet by the light switch. Who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul, not to put too fine a pine on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. Your friend, but I am. There's a picture opposite me, of my primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming Argonauts, new bird of friendliness, like guardian angels, it's always near. New canary in the outlet by the light switch, who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul, not to put too fine a bun on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. While you're at it, leave the nightlight on inside the birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a bun on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. While you're at it, leave the nightlight on inside the birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a bun on it. Say I'm the only. Not to put too fine a bun on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul.
More of the scratched off questions.
More of the, okay. Do you know Frankie Muniz? And
we don't know him anymore, but we met him. I don't know if he remembers us, but he said the one time we met him that he was a drummer and he would like to join our band and be the drummer. And I'm sure he wasn't being serious, and we didn't take him seriously. Okay.
Would have been a totally different band with Frankie Muniz in the mix.
I have a question out of nowhere. So with your children's music, which is awesome, I really love it. I want to know, I'm curious about the process, because I want to know, when you write it, is there a certain, do you have an inclination naturally towards cynicism or darkness that you feel you need to, not really cover up, because children's music can be dark, but do you feel you need to filter it and like translate it into a different kind of?
Sure. Well, I guess with the, you know, our first sort of entry into children's music was a record we made not seriously considering the consequences of trying to do children's, you know, we were just given a very lighthearted offer of, you know, a small amount of money and a distribution deal to do a children's record, and we were not thinking this was a big career move for us. So we actually just enjoyed ourselves and did a lot of stuff, and then I think there were a couple songs that we recorded that we thought, this is too ugly or too weird. And after the fact, I think there was one involving nude clowns, I think, that we thought was just too disgusting.
There was some pushback to just, I think your preconceived notion that you're doing a kid's album, you sort of have to recalibrate a little bit. When you start doing a kid's album, everybody you know, and when you're in a rock band, nobody really tells you like what to do. Like, we've had such a free ride. Like, our booking agent, you know, has never said, you know, you should really do this. They're very, very gentle with you. And I don't know if it's just because we're such an unusual band or if that's just the general mode. Well, I think if you're a booking agent or a manager, you might learn relatively early on that nothing really good comes out of pushing people around too much. Like, but what's funny is that when you start making a kid's record, everybody tells you what to do. Like, everybody knows. So he's like, dinosaurs. I'm telling you, dinosaurs. And it's even more than that. I mean, everybody's got a scheme. Everybody knows how it's supposed to go. And I think from the second we started it, we were almost in a reactive mode where we just wanted to we're very used to kind of protecting what we're doing and thinking about it as like something that's a little bit fragile and can get kind of damaged. I don't think we're by temperament control freaks, but we do recognize that there are times that you might be working on something that's a little bit more fragile than people think it is. And like with the kid stuff, we just wanted it to be defined by us. We didn't want it to seem like, oh, they talked to somebody and they straightened it out in a way that made it nice enough to be right for kids. Mm-hmm. And so just finding the right tone took a little bit. And there were a couple of false starts, but the funny thing is, the first album we did, this No album that we did, was pretty much in between time making another adult rock album and working on the incidental music for the Malcolm in the Middle show, and then we got this. That was so much more successful than we anticipated. We got offered this super fat deal from Disney, and that required a whole kind of calibration of how we were going to approach what we were going to do for kids, because all of a sudden those kids' albums actually were going to be mass marketed. And it was the first time we ever had our records in Walmart. We've been making records for 20 years. We have never sold a record in a Target, a Walmart. Like, those stores have a completely different set of distribution, and they represent half of the music sold in the United States. So it was a very strange transition for us, and it was one of the reasons why we went to doing like a thematic, you know, we did a Science album, we did a 1-2-3's album, and an ABC's album. And the reason they were themed is because at least it's a bridge to people who might not know who we are. I mean, a lot of parents, you know, strolling through the Target are just literally picking it up because, well, I've got some underpants for my kids. I better get them some music too. You know, it's not necessarily that thought out or calculated on their part. They're just, and so having it have like a sort of a vague educational theme made it work. But it's kind of funny. I feel like we're still sort of culture smuggling. I mean, it's such a Trojan horse thing to say, yeah, here's our ABC's album, you know, because it's still us, you know. It's very much got the spirit of what we do, and a lot of it is, you know, I mean, there's some really crazy stuff on those records that I wouldn't say is like, it's not good for kids. I mean, I think it might be interesting for kids, but it's not really designed to be good.
Juices, muffins, pasta and cheese, milk and biscuits and cocktail sauce. I am a grocery bag, salsa and pickles and organic grain. I am a grocery bag, fresh coffee and bagels.
Also, what I was trying to get at, like, with that question is about just your songwriting process, and I don't really want to ask you a general question about that because that's kind of boring. But I've been trying to like figure out, because there's something about your lyrics that are tell such great stories, but they're also ambiguous in a way that it really opens up many interpretations for the listener. And I just want to know, like, when you guys write a song, when you write lyrics, like, do you have something specific in mind that you're trying to capture?
The thing is that we actually have a lot of different ways of writing, and we write for a lot of different. When we're writing for the children's, the Disney stuff, it was very specifically themed. So we had subjects that were all laid. It was in some ways like the opposite of what we normally do, which is just make stuff up and pull stuff out of the air, in a sense. And
blank
if page. Yeah, if we find something interesting, we'll try and write about it. But based on what it is, it can be something very concrete, or it can be something completely open ended and poetic. And I think we don't have a clear idea of what kind of music we're doing in the first place. You know, we don't have an idea of what kind of songs we're supposed to be doing. So we try and just do everything within our own range. I think it's just defined by whatever we think is interesting, and there isn't really another. And you know, I mean, this is another great way a good way for us to sort of foster new ideas, is that we don't limit how we come up with material. So we've come up with stuff in a lot of different. We've come up with a lot of different ways of trying to get the ball rolling, and some of it has been collaborative. We sometimes throw stuff back and forth. Some of it is
some of it's spontaneous.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, just like, comes out of thin air, yeah, kind of thing.
Like this Marty Bellermask song that we were working on that we just did the other day. You know, it was literally like, let's just write a song right now and go.
Steaming up the inside of my Marty Beller mask, 'cause I'm really Whitney Houston on the drums. It's been 15 long years since I put on the Marty mask. You're the only person that I've ever told.
love you, but how will I know? Trick or treat. I can see you through the eye holes of my Marty Beller mask. Stardom was so fake, that's when I got back into the drums. Marty was convenient, a vessel for my dream. I knew exactly how to fill his shoes. Don't walk away from me, I will always love you. But how will I know? Trick or treat. I can see you through the eye holes of my Marty Beller mask, but I'm really Whitney Houston on the drums. Marty gets the mansion, and I get his skins. Don't walk away from me, I will always love you, but how will I know? Trick or treat. I am steaming up the inside of my Marty Beller mask, cause I'm really Whitney Houston on the drums. Look again, this isn't Marty on the drums. I am really Whitney Houston.
I feel like a lot of times with, I mean, you know, your process is obviously different than mine, but I feel like one thing that I can sort of sense that we have in common is that we're often kind of chasing dust specks in a way that, like, that you have a couplet or an idea for a phrase, or it's just sort of a strategy, and then all you're trying to do is get the rest of it out and have the rest of it work as well as the one good idea that you had. And it seems so, sometimes, you know, I mean, songs are so short and so small anyway, but sometimes the ideas for the songs are so microscopic because all you're trying to do is find something that's worth writing a new song about. And there's, you know, when you're aware of the history of songwriting and just you're no longer so enamored with your own output, it's not just like, oh, I can't believe it, I wrote a song. You know, like you've actually, it's like, oh, I'm on song, you know, 200 now. Like, how am I going to get something kind of airborne? And I think that, you know, you just want the mystery of and the spark of the original idea to be sustained for the whole.
Well, and then the other big challenge is to think of ideas without having this overarching concept of like what a song has to be. And that's, you know, I think we're in some ways we are always running the risk of thinking too formally about what's a proper song, you know. And the best stuff that we, I think for us, is like, for, you know, anytime we come up with something good, it's, if there's something completely wrong going on, there's something that breaks the tradition in some essential way, that is the good part, you know.
Yeah.
And that it's something that's, it's almost impossible. It's like a magic trick in a way. So I mean, there's not a way to plan it out, you know. I think that's really the big challenge. And to the extent that we're ever successful, that's what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I, you know, a couple of years ago, it's like 10 years ago, I was collaborating with Mike Doty on a bunch of stuff. And basically, it was really unclear even where it was going to land. And but I was basically kind of putting together tracks for him to like build songs on top of. And his first request was he wanted songs to just have one section. And I know there's other people that right. do this, and it's so sort of the opposite of the way we, you know, we kind of think of, you know, songs as being these very modular, formal, like, you know, verses and choruses and bridges and very, I mean, which is really like almost Tin Pan Alley kind of stuff. And like between him and like and John Roderick, who's also really into this idea of like just going. And like never change, and like the actual form of the song changes, the words change and the melodies change on top of it, but the rest of it is just this sort of like, you know, African thing that's just going like da 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 da. And it sort of opened my mind to the idea, and actually trying to figure out, basically, you know, for me it made me think like, yeah, bring the riff back, you know. Let's just have like just do some cook up some monstrous riffs. Yeah, there's a million ways to write songs, even I mean, even if you're doing the timpanelli thing, there's a lot of ways. But I mean, I think it's interesting when we actually get sort of outside of ourselves a little bit too.
Liked it better that way.
So take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
Istanbul.
Was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
You just liked it better that way.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, now Constantinople. Been a long time gone, now Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks.
Constantinople, no, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
Thanks to Dane Haken and Annie Piggott for a fantastic interview. And as Annie said, arguably the greatest thing that's ever happened to her in her life. That's what you call the Facebook status. Also, big thanks to the two Johns of They Might Be Giants for sitting down and talking with us. We got a lot more interviews coming up in the next few weeks before the end of the semester here on Erasing Boundaries. Deer Tech will be on in a couple weeks. New Orleans bounce artist Big Frida, possibly the interview that I'm most terrified and excited about. Big Sean, who I'll be going to see next week and sitting down with. A little excited about that one, too. Rapper from Ghana, Manifest, will be on campus. And then a few other ones flowing in and out. So it's an exciting time to be Erasing Boundaries here on KDIC FM 88.5. Here's Spaceship by Kanye West.
I've been working as grave shift, and I ain't paying shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly.
I swear I did.
Past the sky.
GLC 38, I'm billion, man.
I've been working as grave shift, and I ain't paying shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly. Past the sky.
My manager insults me again, I will be assaulting him. After I fuck the manager up, then I'm gonna shorten the register up. Let's go back to the gap. Look at my check, wasn't no scratch. So if I stole, wasn't my fault. Yeah, I stole, never got caught. They take me to the back and pat me, asking me about some khakis. But let some black people walk in, I bet you they show off they token blackie. Oh, now they love Kanye, let's put them all in the front of the store. So I'm on break, next to the no-smoking sign with a blunt in a mall. taking my hits, writing my hits, writing my rhymes, playing my mind. This fucking job can't help them, so I quit. Y'all welcome. Y'all don't know my struggle. Y'all can't match my hustle. You can't catch my hustle. You can't fathom my love, dude. Lock yourself in a room doing 5 beats a day for 3 summers. That's a different world, like 3 summers. I deserve to do these numbers. The kid that made that deserves that made back. So many records in my basement. I'm just waiting on my spaceship. I've been working a spaceship, and I ain't made shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly past the sky. Oh, I've been working a spaceship shift and I ain't made shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly.
Man, and I didn't even try to work a job, represent the mob at the same time. Thirsty on the grind, shot state of mind. Lost my mama, lost my mind. Life, my love, that's not mine. Why you ain't signed? Wasn't my time. Leave me alone, work for it, y'all. Half of it's yours, half of it's mine. Only wanna ball, never wanna fall. Gotta get mine, gotta take mine. Gotta check now, reach my prime. Gotta make these haters respect mine. In the mall to 12 with my schedule headset 9. Putting them pants on shelves, waiting patiently. I ask myself where I wanna go, where I wanna be. Life is much more than running in the streets. Holla, hey, yay, hit me with the beat. Put me on my feet, sounds so sweet. Yes, I'm the same OG, same goatee, same low key. Nope, holla at God, man, why you had to take my folks? Hope to see Freddie G, Yousef G, love my G, Rollie G. Police watch me smoke my weed and count my G's. Got a lot of people counting on me, and I'm just trying to find my peace. Should have finished school like mine is, and I probably wouldn't use my beats.
Oh, man, it's precious. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly past the sky. Oh, I've been working a spaceship shift and I ain't made shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly past the sky. Dollar cab coming home real late at night, standing on my feet all damn day trying to make this thing right. And having one of my co-workers say, yo, you look just like this kid I seen in the old Busta Rhymes video the other night. Well, easy come, easy go, how that saying goes. No more broad service cars and them TV shows that all had got snatched from me. A&Rs and they faculties all turn they back on me and didn't want to hear rap from me. So naturally, actually, had to face things factually. Had to be a catastrophe. If the friend is staring back at me, cause nothing's there, nothing's fair. I don't wanna ever go back there, so I won't be taking no days off till my spaceship takes off. Working a spaceship and I ain't made shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly past the sky. Spaceship and I ain't made shit. I wish I could buy me a spaceship and fly past the sky.
That'll do it for this week's Erasing Boundaries. Again, big thank to Annie Piggott, it's been a long show, and Dane Haken, and They Might Be Giants for the interview. Here's the Abbott Brothers with Paranoia in B-flat Major. Have a good Tuesday night and a good rest of your week. Happy all of the time.
But I found myself in a place that I've never been, a place that I thought that I would never be. There's people
people looking back at me. I keep having this dream. I'm at a party. There's people throwing drinks and screaming, telling me that I don't belong. Lately life's been the same. I find this comfortable place with all my friends, and then my friends start telling me that I've always been wrong.
Now I'm so tired of being wrong.
There was a time I could move. There was a time I could breathe. Faces filled with angry faces. It didn't once cross my mind. With paranoia in my heels, will you love me still? When we awaken, you find that the sanity is gone from my. You're so worried about what I'm gonna think. Baby, I'm worried too. But if love is a game, girl, then you're gonna win. I'll spend the rest of my life bringing victory in, if you want me to.
Hello.
What's up, bitches?
This is the Gin and Juice Variety Hour. We're going to play something for you.